V'basra, Perek Ches, Mishnah Vav, 8-6. The point of departure of this Mishnah is that a person has a special ne'emanus, a believability, legal believability, if he claims someone is his son. This is unique. In other words, normally if a person says someone is, let's say, his brother, without evidence, so then that won't have a lot of ramifications if we don't presume or believe it to be true. But if a person says out of the blue, so-and-so is his son, so then he has special ne'emanus, special believability, and that is based on a pasuk, because the end of the parsha talking about the bechor says, ki asa bechor ben hasnua yakir, l'ses lo pishnayim, bechol esher yimatzelo. The pasuk says, the son of the hated wife, talking about in the context of he was trying to cheat him out of his bechor, so to speak, yakir, he knows exactly who he is, l'ses lo pishnayim, to give him the double portion. Now, with all that he has. So the point is that this in context is pretty superfluous, and this extra word yakir he recognizes means that he is believed, we learn from that he's believed to know his son or claim someone as his son with special weight. Now that will have consequences in two potential areas. The first is with respect to Yerusha, meaning if a person dies and let's say he has, you know, two sons. Let's say his oldest is a girl, so there's no Bechor here, okay? Then he has two sons, we'll call the sons Reuven and Shimon. And then, you know, on his deathbed, he says, oh, you guys don't know this, but I actually have another son named Pierre in France, and he's actually my brother from a previous marriage I had, your brother from a previous marriage that I had. So now there are three boys. And even though there's no evidence that Pierre is the son, he will indeed, based on that testimony, you know, in front of two witnesses, etc., be entitled to a third of the inheritance. That's unique. It wouldn't be true in terms of other relatives. Like, for example, if a person, you know, had no children and he knows that his uncles are inheriting him, he can't say, oh, by the way, I have another uncle named Pierre in France. No, that's not going to be significant. So the first area where one's believability regarding identifying a son out of the blue is got through with inheritance. The other area of relevance is in the halachas of Yibum. Yibum is when a person dies without any surviving offspring, no children at all, no descendants, so then his wife, the widow, is to essentially marry or do chalitza with his brother. So in our Mishnah, it's going to be relevant if a man had no children, he also ostensibly had no brother, if he would say on his deathbed, you know, oh, so-and-so is my brother, Pierre, that carries no weight, and the wife, of course, is free to go and no requirement to do yibum and shalina with that man, Pierre. Okay, so that's the backstory here. The Mishnah says inside, Ha'omer zebni ne'eman. If a person says, that person is my son, ne'eman, he is believed, meaning both implications are, first of all, he would inherit like the other sons, if there are any, and second of all, that the wife would now be exempt from doing yibum because he has an heir, assuming that child lived beyond the death of the father, his father. Ze'achi eno ne'eman. However, if a person says, so-and-so is my brother, he is not believed, I mean, neither with regard to sharing an inheritance, and also with respect to a yibum obligation, like I said before. However, v'notel imo bechelko, since this fellow, let's say, for example, again, we have, let's say, brothers Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, three brothers, okay? Reuven claims that Pierre in France is actually his brother. Shimon and Levi say, we don't know what you're talking about, nothing doing. Now, they have a father, the father dies and leaves over, you know, $12,000. So as far as Shimon and Levi are concerned, there are three brothers, each should get $4,000. As far as Reuven's concerned, nope, there are four brothers, and therefore, each should get $3,000. So then, when the father dies, so as far as everyone's concerned, $4,000 will go to Shimon, $4,000 will go to Levi, and of the $4,000 that goes to Reuven, Reuven has to give one of those thousands to Pierre, because he claims Pierre is entitled to that 1,000, right? Because it says he's only entitled to 3,000, and he, at least Reuven, claims that Pierre is entitled to 3,000, in fact, but one will come from Reuven, and Shimon Levi will not be obligated to give him anything. Now, Mace, if, however, Pierre dies before their father Yaakov dies, right? So in the end, there are just three brothers surviving, and that everyone agrees to, then Yachzru Nechas L'Mekomon, so then the whole equation unravels, and the portion that Reuven was going to give to the brother, Pierre, alleged brother, he doesn't give, meaning now each of brothers, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, all get 4,000. The chiddush that Mishnah, of that part of the Mishnah is, it can't be now, you might have thought wrongly, that perhaps, you know, Shimon and Levi could say, listen, if you claim he is the brother and you claim that 1,000 went to him, we should get thirds of that 1,000. That's, of course, not true. And the reason why is because everyone agrees that at that point, each one should get 4,000. There's no reason why the other brother should not get that. However, nafalo nechasim mekomen acher, if now this guy, Pierre, so he dies. And as far as we know, Pierre is claiming, like Reuven's claiming, that they're brothers. So, and let's say for argument's sake that the only brothers around, the only relatives around, is Pierre's so-called brother, alleged brother Reuven. So since Shimon and Levi are also tied into Reuven, once Pierre's estate is passing on to Reuven, it'll pass a third to Reuven, another two-thirds to Shimon and Levi. Right? And that's what it means here. Yirshu achav imo, the other brothers inherit with Reuven in equal thirds. Okay. Now, end of that part of the Mishnah. Now the Mishnah's returned to the topic of how Yerusha works, and although we said in the previous Mishnah that if a person says on his deathbed, even verbally only, he wants to give a gift, that's going to be binding as if he did a formal kinyan. Here we're going to say, Misha Meis, if a person died and he never made any such verbal declaration. However, V'nimtes Dayatiki Keshura Al Yerecho, but we discover that he had like essentially a will that he wrote on his deathbed and he tied it to his thigh, meaning it's clear. No one disputes the fact that he wrote it and he signed it and even there are witnesses and it's sitting on his thigh and he intended it to be seen. Still, Harezu Eino Klum, that has no halachic significance whatsoever, because if in the Daitiki, the will, it said, you know, I want my stuff to pass on to my friend, my friend Pierre in France, so then who cares? His sons are the heirs and they get it, whatever it is. And the fact that he wrote it and said it before he died doesn't make a darn difference. There was that funny dispensation that the rabbis instituted, which is that a person can verbally declare on his deathbed, but that's a verbal declaration. This wasn't that. This was just something written down, and therefore it's not binding. However, says the Mishnah, Zika bala acher, however, if while he was still alive, the person wrote this dayatiki, this kind of will, which gave a gift, and he handed it to like someone else to acquire on behalf of, let's say, Pierre in France, so then, bein mina yorshin, bein she'enu mina yorshin, it doesn't matter if the person who did the receiving of the get to effect the kinyan effectively, the receiving of the will, that he wrote, whether it's like a related party, not a related party, he's a son, not a son, it makes no difference. Devar of kayamin, the gift that's given in the daitiki is indeed binding, because a written contract that's handed over to the formal kinyan is certainly no less binding than a verbal declaration. And therefore, if the person on his deathbed writes down his will to give money, or all his money even, to Pierre, the random guy in Paris, so then, and he gives it to somebody, and the other person receives it on behalf to make a kinyan on behalf of Pierre, so then now Pierre is the happy recipient of that gift during the lifetime of the person on his deathbed, and therefore he's entitled to everything, and the heirs, if that were the case, would get nothing.